are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
Your 50,000-watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for New York's Knicks fans now saying the draft lottery is rigged. Those same fans not alive for the first draft lottery in 1985 when they benefited with Patrick Ewing. 940 ESPN, 940ESPNFresno.com. Your 45-minute tour begins right now. 19 minutes, 37 seconds past the hour of 4 p.m., Pacific Daylight Saving Time. I'm the host of the program, Christopher Gabriel. Delighted to be with you today from Fresno, Yosemite International Airport. We are here for, as we always are, for the return of Central Valley Honor Flight number 19. This is a special flight today because all of the members of this flight, all 68, are from the Vietnam War era. You have veterans from 23 hometowns, 7 different counties. You have men, it's all men on this flight, ranging in age from 64 to 80, representing the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, and the Air Force. I'll be doing a shortened version of the show today because the Giants game was before us. Of course, Giants won 4-3 over Toronto. Paul Leffler, who is always here and emceeing these, this is such a great event. Paul Leffler will be here in a little bit of time, and he will take you through. The military band will be here, made up of Central Valley veterans, and it's a great event. So instead of doing what we normally do, we'll get caught up a little bit more tomorrow. Normally on Wednesdays, we are joined by a gentleman from KOA News Radio in Denver, former wide receiver of the Colorado State Rams, and just so happens that he's waiting for us.
The Mountain West Conference has never been the same since this former wide receiver graduated from Colorado State. He holds the all-time season and career reception marks for... Wait. Sorry, no. That was a different receiver. Never mind then. Here's Marty Lenz.
Always available, no matter how long it takes him to get to his palatial 17,000-square-foot mansion at the foothills of the Rockies. Marty Lenz joining me. How are you, my friend?
I am swell. What's going on with you?
Well, you know, the last time I was out here was a Wednesday as well, and you and I talked. It's of course, an honor flight. It's the return of an honor flight. You have military members from your family. My father was a bombardier on B-29s in the Korean War. Marty, I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask you again. Have you ever seen the return of an honor flight? Because it's really a remarkable event.
No, I have not, but you, like you and one of my other colleagues, is big behind it, too. So I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it. That is a pretty cool thing that we do for our men and women that serve.
It is, and today is special. I've been here and back in North Dakota when I was in the Midwest. I've been here for ones that have been mostly World War II veterans, and then you've had Korean War veterans sprinkled in, certainly, and occasionally some Vietnam veterans. Today, as you overheard in the open, it's all Vietnam veterans, 68 of them, so they're going to be coming back in about an hour and a half or so. But for the meantime, you and I will hang out in the toy department. Let's just get right to what went on last night in Chicago. I think most fans understand what did go on. It was the NBA draft lottery, and Marty, the Knicks, the Cavaliers, and Phoenix each had a 14% chance of getting the number one pick, and I really think that people on our side of the business, meaning media members, did a really poor job of selling this, to the extent that I think they made a lot of people think that it was going to be the New York Knicks, that it was going to be the Knicks, and you had Zion Williamson, you know, getting this idea that he was going to be a Knick, and you had Knicks fans, and then it wasn't the Knicks, and in fact, it wasn't either of those three teams, nor was it the Bulls at 12.5%, or Atlanta at 10.5%, or Washington at 9%. it was the New Orleans Pelicans at 6%. First of all, I thought last night, more than anything else, had drama unlike any previous draft lottery.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's kind of interesting. And if you're a Pelicans fan, your thought is, well, I hope we keep the guy we have, Davis, and I hope that Zion Williamson doesn't return to college or want to. I hope we can get both, because at the very least, well, you're going to be better. I mean, you're going to be automatically better, right? Because they weren't necessarily bad, and considering that they kind of shut Davis down for the last, 20, 30 games, there's a lot of games they probably could have won. I mean, and their record was double what the Knicks were, so... But if you get Zion Williamson, you're going to be better. And then secondarily, you know, it's again, it's marketing and it's entertainment. You're going to put butts in the seats. They're going to sell out. That's a win-win.
Yeah, forgive my interruption. This is the crux of what I wanted to talk with you about as far as Zion Williamson goes. Because you could see last night, and it was widely reported, I mean, everything from the New York Times to ESPN to Fox Sports, that the look on Zion's face was, and his body language, it was very clear that he was surprised, and I sent you an email about this earlier, that I really feel like he had some sort of misconception that it was almost a lock that he was going to go to New York, and he seemed like he was shocked. And for anybody who thinks the thing is rigged, they're out of their minds, because why would the NBA rig it for Memphis and for New Orleans? But here's the thing, Marty. If I'm New Orleans, I don't want to trade Williamson. Why would I want to trade him? You know, the team that we hear the most is the Lakers. And we hear them, you know, putting together a deal that would have, you know, the names that we're pretty used to, whether it's Lonzo Ball and Jordan Hart and Brandon Ingram, and Kyle Kuzma, and maybe the fourth round draft choice. But, Marty, none of those guys are going to sell tickets. None of those guys
are going to sell tickets. Yeah, I'd rather trade them for a ham sandwich. I mean, that's what you're getting for those guys. But you're right. There's not a fair trade value for him, if you want to say talent-wise, coming at least from the Lakers. And more importantly, to get money and to be successful, you need fans who show up. You need TV eyeballs. And I guess New Orleans, I just learned this today. Maybe I should know this, but New Orleans is the smallest of the markets in the NBA. And so for them to be a draw and be relevant – You gotta have talent, because one, winning, but two, you just want entertainment value. You want to have people that want to see them play. I'm really going back in the Wayback Machine, but it's like in the days of Pete Maravich when the New Orleans Jazz were playing. It's that people just wanted to see him because he was just phenomenal and fun to watch. They weren't exactly world beaters, but they were just fun to watch because he was such a star and just had such a flair and a style. That's the same with Williams, and then combine that with the fact with Anthony Davis, they could win. But you're right. There's no one right now of teams that have serious need that I think there's a lot of value in exchange for a Zion Williamson. So I hold pat. The problem is, kind of like we addressed, though, does Williamson say, you forget that, I'm going back to college, you know, which he has an option to potentially do.
He does, but I think part of the reason that that's in play is because nobody knows yet, has he signed with an agent? I don't think he's signed a shoe deal yet. And if he were to go back to college, because he really wants to take – that, you know, theory of dramatic analysis class at Duke, there's no guarantee for him that he's going to go to the team that he ostensibly wants to go to next year. Which leads me to this. If you are the New Orleans Pelicans, I've got to believe that they are inclined to do whatever they can to try and talk Anthony Davis into staying. No differently then when Kawhi Leonard went to Toronto, you heard it, I heard it, all of us heard the fact that he said, this is going to be a one-year deal, I'm going to L.A. Whether it was the Lakers, whether it was the Clippers, who knows. But now, as the year went on, and I've got my source up there is with TSN, and what I've heard is that over the course of the year, because of, you know, Toronto is a wonderful city, he's found himself softening a little bit on the idea of wanting to leave. Then he makes the shot for the ages. He is embedded in Toronto sports history forever, and that was just to win a semifinal series. So at a minimum, Marty, Kawhi Leonard is having reason for pause. Is it safe to maybe, I don't know if we can assume this, but at least give rise to the conversation that maybe Anthony Davis, who has been rock solid saying, I want out of here, is going to say, you know, we got Zion coming. We got a couple of other good players here. We might have something here.
Well, I'm going to back up first. Zion Williams is not about staying to take the, you know, advanced calc class or whatever you said. It's the fact that he maybe doesn't want to go to New Orleans, and maybe he thinks in the back of my mind, the better option is to stay at Duke and see if I can win a college basketball title. That may have more appeal than him going even to the NBA for big money to play for New Orleans because of if just not liking the situation. Now,
right.
As for Anthony Davis, maybe, but a lot of I think if that – now, again, you bring up the caveat. If Zion Williamson is drafted and stays in New Orleans, then maybe Anthony Davis decides he wants to stay because then that's the number two, the Batman to the Robin. So, but if he doesn't, then you sit there and say, nah, he's going to go. And I'm going to keep saying this, pivoting even further, when you're talking about, you know, why I always draw a blank in his dang name in Toronto. It's just so
Kawhi
stupid.
Leonard.
It's on the San Diego State. Kawhi Leonard, thank you. I'm just having a moment.
No worries.
You know, yeah. So, but I, to me, even though he's having the success, two things can be true. I just don't think he's long there because of everything else he's alluded to. Southern California kid wants to go the allure. That's not knocking Toronto. I'm just saying the situation is with the way things are set up now in the NBA, Toronto is not a sexy city to be in based on all those things. Oh, you know, he maybe can eventually make it one because I think for a while prior to the Splash Brothers, Golden State was not exactly thought of from a basketball standpoint as sexy as a city. And, well, now they've made it that way. So, you know, that can change and be transformed too. And maybe Kawhi says to himself, I can be that guy to make that transformation. That's possible. Maybe Anthony Davis says the same thing for New Orleans. I don't know. But with all these moving parts, I still think for all these guys, the allure is to play in one of the major cities, one of the Tiffany franchises. And even though the Lakers are moribund and terrible, it's still the Lakers. And I think people say, well, it's the Lakers. They have the history. I can go and make my own history by bringing them back to the glory years, and maybe that's the allure of that. But in the case of Zion Williams, they're going to have to bring a lot to bear for any kind of trade or something like that. They don't have it. And I don't think Anthony Davis wants to go. I'm not sure after the last courtship, whatever you want to call it, maybe he doesn't want to play with LeBron, but maybe he thinks I'd like to go play somewhere else, New York,
Marty,
or some other city more to his liking.
All right, look, we're talking with Marty Lenz, KOA News Radio, former wide receiver, Colorado State. I don't know if this is a devil's advocate road, but let me go down this road with you. I think we've seen, and you and I are both, we're both very blessed to have been well-traveled around the country. There are more places, and I'm preaching to the choir here, there are more places to play basketball than New York and Los Angeles or the Boston Celtics or Chicago. Damian Lillard, I hope he stays in Portland forever. He is a star there, as is C.J. McCollum. Donovan Mitchell in Salt Lake City for the Utah Jazz. And more specifically, Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is only 90 miles from Chicago, but the reality is Milwaukee is a small market. It's a great city. It is a cosmopolitan city. I have family there. It's a world-class city. But the fact of the matter is you can be a big star. You can be a big star and be in a different market other than New York or Los Angeles. So I hope that some of those have given him reason to at least pause and think about that.
Well, no, and I'm with you. They have to be so self-confident, which I'm not sure they lack for that, but they have to sit there and say, I'm willing to eschew the easy by going to, again, one of those Tiffany franchises, Lakers, Knicks, even though they've sucked, but one of those places where you think that's the allure and the trappings of money, and I'm going to make my mark here. And we can point to David Robinson, and we can point to the big fundamental of still doing that in San Antonio, but for Kawhi, that just wasn't his thing. So it can be done. But I have to admit, when you think about the legendary teams, a great example. I don't think even though we should think about them, and they should be in the conversation, and they are against Real Basketball Insiders, but people don't think of San Antonio. And look at how many titles they won with Pop. They
right.
don't think of them
right.
in the same way they think of the Lakers. You almost just say, San Antonio, they've got the five, but is three more, and I know they have six, but is three more valuable in a market like Chicago
right.
than five is in San Antonio? Is four more important in Golden State than five is in San Antonio? And I think some people, maybe the less astute basketball fan, will say, yeah, because it's those major cities where there's, you know, all kinds of activity, world-class cities. Respectfully, San Antonio is a great city, but it's not a world-class city. And I think that's the allure people think about. They want to be the biggest star on the biggest stage. And sometimes they think, well, I can do and win a championship here, but if I can win a championship here in the shadow of some of these greats, then that burnishes my legacy even further.
We're talking with Marty Lenz, and we're going to talk a little bit more. We might talk about what's going on with Maximum Security and what the owners of that horse that won the Kentucky Derby, and then they didn't win the Kentucky Derby. We'll talk about that coming up next. Live from Fresno Yosemite International Airport, we are waiting for the return of Central Valley Honor Flight number 19. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
It's always a great day when we are out at the airport. We have the opportunity to be here for the return of an honor flight. Paul Leffler will be taking over at 5 p.m. He'll join me in a couple of minutes. We'll talk a little bit about, we do every time that we're here, we try to remind folks of what honor flight is all about, why we're here, and why it's important to honor their service and honor, you know, what they've done for this country and how we are able to live because of all of them who came before us and served this great country. We are talking to Marty Lenz from KOA News Radio. Marty, the owners of Maximum Security, of course, we've gone through that. I'm not going to relitigate the whole thing. But the owners of Maximum Security, they win the race, and then we learn that the driver, Luis Reyes, he went you know, a couple of tracks outside of where he was on the rail. He gets disqualified. The horse gets put 17th. Country House wins. Now the owners, Gary and Mary West, are suing, and they are saying, I don't mean to laugh, but they're saying that the disqualification was unconstitutional. This is from the Louisville Courier, the Courier Journal. I'm going to read this. Among the defendants are the stewards who made the decision, including Chief Steward Barbara Borden, as well as several members of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, including Executive Director Mark Guilfoyle. Marty, here's my thought on this. The one thing of the Kentucky Horse Racing Association process that I don't like is that there is no appeal in place. When a steward makes a decision, that's that. You are not allowed to appeal. I think that's wrong. But beyond that, to call what they've got a set of rules, they've got parameters that they are working within, and to suggest that it is unconstitutional, that seems to be a massive reach.
Yeah, it's unless conflating constitutional with due process, where there needs to be a hearing on that sense. But yeah, I don't know where the horse race fits into the Constitution or maybe the Articles. Who knows? I've got to maybe look at my constitutional law more. At some point, and I am not a racing expert, and I've heard from experts, and most experts say it is what Maximum Security did and what their jockey did who was illegal. And the only reason it took so long is because it's the Kentucky Derby. They said any other kind of race, that would have been done in 2 to 3 minutes, and he would have been taken down. But because it was the Kentucky Derby, it took longer. At some point, and I don't like when a sport is decided by a ref or by a judge. We talk about that all the time with all kinds of sports. I don't like that. However, in this case, they use the video evidence. And at some point when the owner – we always say, you just got to take the L. At this point, he's got to take – you know, the ownership has got to take the L because they're not going to get it back. They're not going to rerun the race. The more you stretch this out, I think it hurts your credibility as an owner. You can always say, you know, again, run your horse the next race, but I guess it's not running, and just prove it. Go out and say it could be one of those things where, you know, we didn't get it, but we are the mythical Triple Crown winners. They could be the UCF of horse racing if they decided to do that, or something like that, though UCF didn't get DQ'd. They just need a chance. So you just got to take the L of the ownership at this point. I've heard enough analysis on this that I feel like, based on the experts, not my opinion, I say now I understand why they did it, and I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
Yeah, and it's the problem that I have with this is I know they're upset, and putting myself in their shoes, Marty, I understand, but
I do too.
But at the same time, wouldn't you agree? And as a former athlete, these things happen. A decision happens. A decision becomes final. You go through the process that is available to you, whatever it is or isn't, and then at some point, Marty, you have to move on. And dragging it out even longer, you start to make your side of this not so much, you know, where you feel badly for them what happened, but you start to almost resent the fact that they are carrying this out to the extreme. And I'm not sure we could say that it's a bad look for horse racing in terms of the way everything played out. Fair enough. But to continue this further, and then you add on the 15-day suspension for the jockey, the whole thing, the optics start to get a little bit confusing.
Well, they undermine the credibility of the legitimacy of the sport. And secondarily, like we talked about the last time, the reason they have this rule in place is because, if I'm reading this right, there's been 23 horse deaths and accidents on the track where they've had to put down these horses. Right now, thoroughbred racing is literally could be on its last legs with all the upheaval about animals' rights and everything else that's taking place with this. they are not in a very popular spot in general. So part of the reason I think that they did this and came out so strongly is to preserve the sport. So I know maximum security may be collateral damage in all this, even though I still think it was the right decision. This is about the longevity of the sport, not just one race, not one microcosm. But there have been 20, we had an expert on, or somebody shared with us, there's been 23 accidents at the track with these horses. They've had to put them down. And so they say that's why you have these rules that you can't cross, if you want to say, in the face of another horse. So it's about the safety. So don't undercut your own sport because it didn't work out the way you wanted it, because you'll have longevity by playing by the rules as opposed to getting this one instance.
That's exactly right. One more thing for you before we take a pause and welcome in Paul Loeffler in just a second. Last night, Golden State Warriors win game one. They won like 150 of those in a row. I'm exaggerating, but 116-94. Steph Curry goes for 36. Klay Thompson goes for 26. And, Marty, once again, we are seeing this wild overreaction. It's going to be a short series. What's Portland going to do? Listen, I think the Warriors are going to win this series, but we're going to see adjustments. They just came off a seventh game at altitude in your hometown. It's not a stretch to have imagined going into the game that Golden State was going to win. The game was a 6 or 7 point game with about 6 or 7 minutes to go, and then Steph and the gang just wore them down. I think we're going to see a very different game tomorrow night. It wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors win. But, Marty, again, we're seeing a bit of an overreaction. Portland's going to make defensive adjustments. Portland is going to make offensive adjustments, and we're going to see a much more productive backcourt of C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard. Would you agree?
I kind of, but I hear something that blows me away, kind of to pivot a bit. Here's a stat. Steph Curry is 28-1 without Kevin Durant on the court. 28-1.
Right.
And so when people say, are they a worse team with Kevin Durant? You could say they're not as talented. And again, Kevin Durant, I think, fits in well. But you have to sit and say, are they a worse team? No. They actually may have greater chemistry to some degree because of this. So anybody that said, well, without Kevin Durant, they're going to fail, is like, no, these are the Splash Brothers pre-Kevin Durant. So think about how good these guys are.
Well, and Marty, and it's entirely the reason why I said on my program on Friday before Game 6 against Houston, I said, listen, they're going to win. And for the reason you just cited, that they're not better, but you hit the nail on the head. It's a different offensive rhythm. It's a different flow. Guys, we're talking about a team that was able to win a world championship before Kevin Durant got there. They haven't forgotten how to win. You still had Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson on the court. You still had a bench that was showing that they could be productive. I think that people rush to that. But I do think we're going to see a different series. How long do you think this series is going to go? I'm guessing you're going to say it's five.
Yeah, I was going to say five or six. Whether it was the Nuggets or Portland, whoever came out of that, I still think it's going to be probably no more than six. But I could see it going five. Portland gets a win. I'm not sure they get two.
He is Marty Lenz, and normally we're joined by him for about an hour or so, a little bit shorter today because we are here for the Return of Honor flight. Marty, always a great pleasure, my friend. Be well, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk next week for a lot longer.
All right, already looking for a week from now. Thank you, my friend.
All right, you got it. Coming up, we will talk with my good friend and colleague here at 940 ESPN, Mr. Paul Loeffler. He is sort of Mr. Honor Flight. Nobody more connected than Paul Loeffler when it comes to Honor Flight, except for the veterans themselves. Paul is next. This is the Christopher Gabriel Program.
Christopher Gabriel returns.
One more segment of a short CGP. Normally it's 3 hours. Today it's much shorter. Some of you are happy about that. Others not so much. We are live at Fresno Yosemite International Airport for the return of the 19th Central Valley Honor Flight, 68 Vietnam War era veterans that are comprised of 23 hometowns in 7 different counties. All of the vets on this flight are men, and they range in age from 64 to 80. Every time that I am out here with the real honor of being a part of event, a very, very, very small part of this, my part is just standing up here and doing sports, I'm joined by my good friend and colleague at 940 ESPN, Paul Loeffler. Boy, it never gets old coming out to these, does it?
Never, never. And it's always tough when the flight's a little bit late, because some people drive from long distances and they say, oh, it's an hour late. I don't know if I can stay that long. And we know that there are also those other people who thought they wouldn't be able to get here in time. So now that the flight won't land until after 7 o'clock, maybe some of those other folks out there listening can make it here to the airport. If you're here by 7, maybe even 7:30, you're going to see these vets marching through. And if you've never been here before, there's really no way to describe it, Christopher. I seriously, this is the 19th one, and I've gotten goosebumps on all 18 of them because it's so powerful to see what it means to these veterans.
You're so right. I've mentioned that even though I started in radio in Minneapolis, my first daily show was in North Dakota, and probably my second week there in Fargo, I was hearing about this thing called an honor flight, and I'd never heard of it. I didn't know what it was. And so they said, all you need to do is come to the airport with us, and you'll understand. And it was chilling in the best possible way. It was a remarkable moment to watch these great men and women. That day, it was all men and one woman who came back, and they ranged from Pearl Harbor survivors to people who were at Anzio, fellow Americans. One of them who was on that flight, it turns out, as I found out much later on, I went through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and got her on my show. Now she's the wonderful woman, the late Agnes Scherer. She was on a medical boat, 100 yards from the USS Arizona on Pearl Harbor Day. And this particular day is unique, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the first one that is all Vietnam veterans?
Right. So we started out with the mission of just taking World War II veterans because the World War II Memorial is the most recent to be built. It wasn't built till 2004, and the age of those veterans was such that they weren't going to get there on their own. So that was really the impetus behind Honor Flight. And a few years ago, we felt like, okay, we've taken all the World War II veterans who want to go. Maybe it's time to wrap up. And the message we got from this community was, hey, no, we'll keep supporting you. We'll keep donating because this is all donations. It's all volunteers. They said, if you can keep this going for Korean War veterans and Vietnam veterans, we'll keep donating. And that has happened, and more people step up. And we're going to need a lot more because right now we have over 350 Vietnam veterans waiting to have this opportunity. But we've taken some Vietnam veterans in the past. This is the first flight that's all Vietnam veterans. No World War II or Korean War veterans, all Vietnam veterans. And our next one in September, we'll be back to some World War II, some Korea, and some Vietnam. It just happened by doing a couple flights close together that we were able to take all those applications we had from the previous wars and devote this one entirely to Vietnam vets. So it's really created a different dynamic for the trip. And for those veterans, having that wall that heals, as it's been referred to, be the centerpiece of their experience, it's really been neat to see some of the images and video and moments that are coming back from D.C., which we're going to hear about when they land here a little after 7 o'clock.
And that wall, I've seen it, but not in a way that would have the same impact as being with a bunch of veterans. I've just been there with families, tracing names from family members, from neighbors, from friends. And you and I have talked about this before, Paul. The most striking part of that wall is, and I think it really points up the phrase less is more. It is elegant and powerful in its simplicity.
It is, and in my mind, it's probably the most powerful of all the memorials. And my grandfather served in World War II, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to start it here was to get those guys there. But so many of the World War II veterans go on this trip, and they're more moved by the Vietnam Wall than anything else. Maybe they had a son who served. But when you see all those names, because the other memorials don't have that list of names on them. This is 58,000-plus names. Every single one of those guys and ladies gave their lives for our freedom. And in this case, with 68 Vietnam veterans going, everyone has somebody to look for on that wall. One of the vets was carrying a list. He carries it in his pocket every day in his wallet, 36 guys from his company who were killed. And he went up and made rubbings of three of them, and he said, that's enough for now. That's what I can handle for now. But it's so powerful to see the names. I think it makes it real. It adds some gravity to it. And hopefully for these veterans, the experience of going there, sharing it with each other, and maybe most powerfully the way they've been received everywhere they've gone and the way they're going to be received here tonight when they land a little after 7 and this big crowd is here to cheer them on. That can produce a kind of healing that I don't know if anything else can.
And it is. And by the way, this is the CGP live from Fresno Yosemite International Airport. We are here for the return of the 19th Central Valley Honor Flight. Paul's going to be taking over in just a couple of minutes. What's always remarkable to me is we get here early and we set up and we do the program and people start sort of filing in and what have you. And then times that I've had to leave, it never fails to amaze me that watching the videotape of when they are coming through those doors over there, it is mobbed in here. It is like watching the return of a Fresno State national championship team coming through. Everybody wants to be a part of it. Everybody feels the emotion. It's riveting. And that leads me to this. When is the – I know you've been on these trips. When's the last time you went on one?
You know, I've actually – I get asked this a lot, and some people think I go on every one of them. But I've actually only been on one of our flights. Now, I go to D.C. a lot. I have to be there in a couple weeks. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to see Honor Flight take off here, is I'd been in Washington to see other groups come through. But with our group, we have so many awesome volunteers. We have so many capable people. It's not about me. I never want it to be about me.
Right.
And I've realized that the best way I can serve is by leading our board, by being a spokesperson, and by running this Welcome Home, because it kind of becomes a three-ring circus.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things to coordinate, and I don't want to leave that off to anyone else, unless you're volunteering. If you want to take over the Welcome Home, maybe I'll go next time.
Anytime you need me to help you as opposed to guide this, nobody better than you for this, that's for sure.
But what's awesome, Christopher, is the people who come out. And we don't send out all these invitations. We don't beg people to come. They want to come. The Clovis Community Band has been here every time we've done Honor Flight in Fresno. They're here. They'll be here tonight playing. We have these cadets, these sharp uniforms you see. These are junior high cadets from Kerman who are here tonight to salute our vets. I just was talking to a few folks from Lemoore. We have over 50 sailors from NAS Lemoore who will line that corridor, stand at attention, and salute those veterans as they come through. And I'm sure there are people I haven't mentioned that are going to be here tonight that I don't even know about yet. But every time we do one, more people show up, more people want to help. And, again, that's something that's going to need to continue. If we're going to get those 350 Vietnam veterans who are on the waiting list right now and all those who haven't applied yet, plus more World War II and Korean War vets who are just so humble they haven't wanted to accept this opportunity yet, if we're going to get all of them there, we're going to have to continue to bang the drum and find more dollars to make it possible.
You said something there that I wanted you to amplify on, and that is the veterans who have gone versus the other side of the bar graph, the veterans that don't want to accept the honor of going. How difficult is it, in your experience, to bridge that gap?
I think it depends. You know, some of the older veterans, if you've been married for 70 years, being away from your wife for 3 days is an awfully big deal.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't want to take that chance and don't want to be gone. Or, you know, they're just so humble. They say other guys went through worse things. Even if it's guys who got wounded or were, you know, had a ship that was sunk out from underneath them, whatever the case may be, they're so humble as a rule that they've been hesitant. Now, this Vietnam generation, I think, is a different dynamic because these guys got such a rude awakening when they came back. I mean, so many of them were instructed, don't even wear your uniform in public because bad things are going to happen to you. And now, if you were watching any of the media, we've got a lot of media on this flight this time. This morning, they go to the U.S. Marine Corps Memorial, which, of course, has that beautiful statue of Iwo Jima in World War II, but is dedicated to all Marines who've given their lives. And our vets start rolling up, and there's a crowd of a couple hundred school kids from Florida who are on their field trip. And the spontaneous applause start to ring out. And if you see that video and you see the looks on those veterans' faces, it's the exact opposite of what they got 50 years ago when they came home. So it's so powerful. And if that greeting in Washington this morning meant something to them, just imagine when they see a capacity crowd at the airport in red, white, and blue screaming their lungs out for them tonight, what that's going to do for these veterans.
You know, and you, as you say that about Vietnam veterans and the greeting they didn't receive 50 years ago, you know, some of us remember those days.
Sure.
Some of us remember the Paris peace talks and all of that. And it was a different time, and it was a different mood. It was a different flavor. And this is something that, I mean, I don't like to use the phrase this is overdue, but I think in many ways it really is overdue. It is the welcome that they didn't receive.
And just in talking to some of the families, because the veterans are on the flight, but their wives, their kids, so many of their friends are here, and just walking through, I'm hearing some of those stories of just what the calls they've gotten already and what it's meant to them and how different it is and how much closure and healing they've experienced already. And right now, you know, they're in the air over the middle of America reading letters from their friends and family thanking them for their service. So they're getting ready, going to be pretty worked up and emotional by the time they land. But the Valley has a chance. If you're out there listening right now, you've got time to be here. The plane won't land till after 7, so be here and knock their socks off. Let them hear it from the bottom of your heart. Thank you for serving our country.
I say it every time that we're out here, and you just said it, but I'll repeat it, and that is that if you don't have plans tonight, no, even if you do have plans tonight, find a reason to come, pay a few bucks for parking, and just come in here and be a part of this. You can have coffee, you can have some juice, you can have some chips, a sandwich, and just be a part of this because it is something that you simply will not forget when you see what happens here. The 350 veterans who are on a waiting list wanting to take a trip, is there something through Central Valley Honor Flight that is, there's only a certain amount of trips that you can take during the course of the year, or is it just when we have the funds available, we plan the trip?
Yeah, and we do have to act quite a bit in advance. So right now, this is our third, what are we? No, we're in May. This is our second trip this year. We'll do a third in September. If we can do three or four trips a year, we'll get through that list fairly quickly. But it's about $200,000 a trip, so that we need the donations, and you can do that at cbhonorflight.org.
He is Paul Leffler. Thank you, my friends. Always a pleasure.
Right back at you.
Paul is going to be out here taking control of this whole evening. It's going to be great. My thanks to all of you. My thanks to Marty Lenz. Also, Russ back at Mission Control, and my guys out here, Pat and Louise, doing a great job as always. We will see all of you in 22 hours. Until then, you're on your own.